Speak with power, lead with presence, build your confidence. Meet Central Florida's charisma coach. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show. Now, here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. I am Mary Gardner, and I am so thrilled that you're visiting with us today. I know that you're going to have a fun time because the person that we're talking to today is a lot of fun, and it's going to be a really special conversation because we're talking about something that affects every single one of us. It's our purpose, our work, and the problems that we're called to solve in the world. And, you know, we're living in a time where everything is shifting and the economy feels uncertain. Technology is moving so fast, and AI is changing a lot of industries and jobs that felt secure before it may not be secure forever. I want to make sure that you're prepared for that, because it does raise a question for all of us here, is that where do you bring value and where can you bring value? So if everything changed tomorrow, what problem would you be able to solve? Because at the end of the day, the people who are going to thrive are the ones that see a problem and step up and solve it. And today's guest is one of the greatest examples of that that I have ever seen. He is a dear friend of mine and someone who came to the United States from East Africa, and he built a life, a mission, and a movement by doing exactly that. He saw a problem and he saw problems, and instead of walking past it, he solved it, not just once, but over and over and over. From founding the Global Soap Project to leading major organizations, now taking on one of the biggest challenges in America today, the chemicals in our food and how they are impacting our health, our children, and even our mental well-being. This conversation is going to be about courage, about mission, about reinvention, and you asking yourself, where is the problem in front of you? And what am I going to do about it? Let's welcome my friend, Derek Kayongo. Welcome to the show, Derek. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, and you're very, very generous. For those of you who are listening, I pay Mary a lot of money to put me up and make me look beautiful and wonderful.
You're so funny. That would be a side conversation. We'll have to talk about that. I like that. That sounds good. Well, listen, you and I have known each other a long time, and you are one of the most fascinating people that I know. Your origin story is so fantastic. You are one of the most dynamic speakers. I talk about you all the time, just how you totally transform audiences. You get them excited. You are a powerhouse. So we're going to dive in. I want to talk about your East Africa, you know, life before you came to the U.S. What was life growing up and what shaped your unbelievable perspective on the world?
You know, first of all, thank you so much for having me and your team. East Africa is a very remarkable place. For those of you who don't know where East Africa is, we're in the east part of Africa, obviously. And I'm originally Ugandan. And East Africa is made up of a couple countries. But Uganda is in the heart, that little part of next to Kenya, above Tanzania, right next to Rwanda, right below Sudan. That's where we are. We are the source of the Nile, Mary. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the Ethiopians think they're the source of the Nile, too, because we have the White Nile and the Blue Nile. Mm. But they're not here to actually be on the radio show. So I'm going to claim it right now. Mm. Uganda is the source of the Nile. So that's where I'm originally from. I was raised by two really fascinating parents. Both of them were teachers. And really quickly, they found out that teaching doesn't pay very well. Mm-hmm. So they were going to morph into something else. So they became entrepreneurs right before my eyes. At the age of five, wow. Mary, I saw my mom become a wedding gown seamstress.
Oh.
And I joke all the time that she didn't have mannequins for flower girl dresses. So guess who was the mannequin? Moi. So that's why
that's great. Oh, no.
So that's why I dress better than everybody in the U.S. I'm like the most fascinating dresser.
You
ever.
Are. Oh, my gosh. Your clothing is just brilliant. And I know that we talked about it before. I mean, you put together things. You always look so sharp. You're famous for that bow tie. But I know you've shopped in thrift stores and good stores, yes. And everything. You've just got such a beautiful style.
Yes. So, and then my dad became a soap maker and became fantastic, built the second largest printing press business. So I grew up around business. Mm. And then really quickly, in conclusion, we lost all of that because of the war and this reprobate of a leader called Idi Amin, who took over. and destroyed our lives. So I ended up becoming a refugee. So from going from private schools to fashion shows and weddings every Friday and Saturday to becoming a refugee without anything. So that's who I am. I'm a lovely Rift Valley kid.
Wow, that's incredible. And to have everything ripped away like that after you've been successful is just tragic. I mean, it could happen at any time, anywhere. And so you were obviously able to come to the U.S. and turn your life around. Tell us about that journey to the U.S. and what was your big cultural or personal adjustment? I mean, how was that? I know a lot of people in Uganda, because of LinkedIn, they're very ambitious. There's a lot of them that are very ambitious. You know, personality and everything. But how was that coming to the U.S. and what was the big adjustment for you?
The big adjustment for me was I landed in the U.S. and I'd never been around such incredible development and advancement. You know, the skyscrapers and the food and the diversity. I just was shocked to see so many people from all over the world in one place. Because remember, I landed in Philadelphia. Mm. And Philly, for those of you who've never been to Philly, you gotta go to Philly. It's fantastic. Philly is where is it? That's where Thomas Jefferson wrote the Constitution, and these big things happened. You know, Benjamin Franklin. These are Philly boys. You know, so landing there for me was remarkable. And when I got there, the first adjustment was I walk into a hotel room, and I find in the bathroom there were three bars of soap that were named facial soap, body soap, and hand washing soap. And that did not include the shampoos.
Oh. Yeah, we take that for granted. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what? Because remember, my father was a soap maker. Mm-hmm. And there's no time in the day that you say, Derek, that's your body soap, not your bath soap. That is your hair soap, not your...
Wow, yeah.
I was like, why do they have names for every bar of soap? So that was my first culture shock, is the amount of... diversity in terms of people being here and the amount of soap that was in the hotel room.
That is so funny. Well, I see kind of how you would have thought about creating the soap over here. And before you tell me that, you have built your life around solving problems. Do you think that you got that from your parents when they were looking at their life and like, oh, I'm going to start a business? Is that how you... started that whole philosophy of solving problems?
You know, you're absolutely right. And that's why I say every time I give a talk to people, I say that most Americans find inspiration by reading a book, you know, for example, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey or Malcolm Gladwell, you know, David and Goliath, which is fine. Those are wonderful books. These are fantastic storytellers. But there's nothing that's fundamental to a child like a good parent.
Oh,
to have a great parent is so amazing. Mm. There's nothing that's fantastic like that. Because like any other animal or any other species, a zebra needs a parent. A lion needs a parent. They don't need a book to read a book to become a fantastic lion. They study the mother. They study the father. Mm. So I study my mom and dad. And as they built their businesses and started to really find purpose in life, I realized that the only way to be happy in life is to really have purpose in life.
Oh, yes, for sure. I'm going to say that word again, purpose. Mm-hmm. It's to find purpose in life. Yes, absolutely. You totally have. I know that you had a moment that really changed everything when you went in and you saw that. So how did you get like going from having the 5 and 6 different kinds of soap to starting the Global Soap Project? And what was the Global Soap Project? Explain that and what you guys did.
Yeah. So when I saw that soap, I said, wow, this is kind of interesting. So I put the 3 bars in my bag for another day. But every evening they will come and clean the room and they will take the partially used bar of soap and replace it with brand new soap. And the reason why they were doing that is because the hotel was an elegant hotel and they wanted to look sophisticated and all that stuff. So I asked them, I said, what did you do with the partially used bars of soap? And they said, we throw those away because, you know, we are elegant, you know? And I'm like, wow, that elegant is so expensive.
Yeah.
I'm African. I'm a former refugee. Please don't do that because that's wasteful. Because they were throwing away, as I found out, Mary, American hotels in aggregate were throwing away 800 million bars of soap annually.
800 million bars of soap they were throwing away? Oh, yes. Wow.
Yes. In the landfills, moreover. Oh. In your landfills.
Wow. Ooh.
That is not to mention the little plastic bottles, you know, because you had the facial, you know, the hand washing soap, the shampoo, the body cream, and, you know, the mouthwash if you're lucky. Now imagine all those little plastics going into your landfill.
That is waste.
That is an environmental problem.
Oh.
So that's what really got me into thinking I can recycle the soap and make some brand new soap and benefit people back home in Africa, in Latin America, in Haiti, who need soap.
Yes.
And so the question was, how do you recycle that soap?
Mm.
And if we had figured that out, then we could actually solve the problem of waste.
Oh, that's so great. You saw a problem. Mm. You fixed it. You basically knew how to build soap or make soap or refurb soap because of your dad. But you know what, Derek? People see problems every single day. We just have a minute before the break, but people see problems and walk by them. What makes someone stop and really take responsibility?
Personal observation, personal interest in what you are skilled at. Everything that you see around you right now in your house, if you're at home, in your hotel, if you're at a hotel, if you're driving a car, everything you see around you is based on a human being like you.
Yes.
Who sat down and said, I'm going to solve this problem. If it's a seatbelt. It's car accident. Somebody may have seen a car accident. That was Ralph Nader, who is a very famous American politician, who saw the need for seatbelts.
Yes.
Because of car accident. Yeah. Remember Ralph Nader? Yeah. That's Ralph Nader.
We're gonna pick that up after we get back from the break, Derek. That's so fascinating. You have so many stories. I love it. We're talking to Derek Kayongo about how he came to the United States and started the Global Soap Project. And we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back with this fascinating, amazing human being, Derek Kayongo. Stay right with us. We'll be right back.
Where voice meets vision. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. And we are having a fascinating conversation with my guest today, Derek Kayongo. Derek is one of the most fascinating people that you'll meet on the lecture circuit. He's been a speaker for a long time, and we met years ago. And I've just watched his career blossom. And so today I wanted to bring him to my audience for you guys to be able to learn about reinvention and in today's world of AI and how scary it can be when so many people are going to be losing their jobs. You've got to be able to be innovative. You've got to be a leader. You've got to be able to see problems. So, Derek, thank you for being here today. We were talking before about Ralph Nader, who actually saw a problem with the seatbelts. Tell me that story.
Yeah, there was an English engineer that was called George Clayley, C-A-Y-L-E-Y. He invented the seatbelt, but there was nobody taking that idea seriously. And people were dying out of car accidents because they didn't have seatbelts. Ralph then championed that particular idea. And before you know it, it was law. It takes this idea that if you watch and see a problem and you're a good observer and you're just not walking through life purposelessly, you know, you're not just a function of being alive. You know, you wake up, you eat, you sleep, you go to the bathroom, you play sports, and then you die. I mean, you can do that. That's fine. But what your show is all about is how do you find purpose?
Yes.
And so what I did was to find purpose in what I thought was a wasteful problem within the hotel industry. And that was, the hotels are not in the business of recycling soap. They're in the business of welcoming you as a guest and making your room beautiful. But they had this problem of wastefulness. So what, rather than complain about it and go and picket them and say how wasteful the hotels are, I brought them a solution. I said, hey, here's the solution. I can recycle the soap. I can recycle all that stuff. Rather than living in the environment, and we can benefit people who need soap around the world. And because of that, Mary, guess what? They saw benefit in that, and they funded my whole project. So your purpose can meet, the direction of other people, and you can actually be funded and you can be helped. But you cannot say nobody wants to help me when you don't know what your purpose is.
That's so right. Purpose
always meets need, and need always meets help. And help is always best in solution. There are people out there waiting to help you, but you have to tell us what your purpose is.
Yeah. So you went and got help. Tell me how you did that. I mean, here you have this problem. You're like, give me the soap. I got 800 million pounds of soap. What are you going to do with it? You had to go and explore, right? I mean, that could have been intimidating. Like, where do you go? Who'd you talk to? Who do you call?
So that goes to the heart of why people don't do what you're talking about, mm-hmm. which is purpose-driven life. Because it's not just enough to have an idea.
Yeah. A lot of people stop there. A lot of people stop at the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, you know why? Because ideas are like girlfriends. They're hard. You have to manage. You have to really attract them. You have to woo them. You have to dine them. You have to buy them clothes. You have to really love them before they come to you. So what I did was then unpack what it means to actually recycle soap, what it means to build a factory, what it means to source investors, what it means to develop a storyline that people can believe in and be interested in. Mm. I had to really sit down and come up with a game plan. So purpose is important, but do you have a game plan? Mm. And that is where most people fail in purpose, because they don't have a good game plan. And game plans can fail sometimes. Like one day the Miami Heat will win a game, the next day they will lose a game because the game plan is different. So don't worry about losing and failing. Just keep on with the game plan and revising it and revising it. So that's what I did. And before you know it, I went to the hotel industry. I gave them my big game plan, and it was very simple. How many hotel rooms do you have in the U.S.? Because I was talking to Hilton at the time, and I can tell them, because this is on website, you can Google it. And they told me how many hotel rooms they have. I said, average, how many people come to your hotel rooms and how long do they stay? Which mathematically gave me how many bars of soap, therefore, do they leave behind? So I took that number and took it to waste management. And I asked them, if I was to throw away X amount of tonnage, because then the number of soap gives me the tonnage mathematically, then they told me it would be about $1.3 million to throw that amount of tonnage away. So then I went back to Hilton and I told them the mathematics that I had come up with. And I said, I will save you $1.3 million, number one. Number two, you will stop throwing away the soaps into the environment, so you save the environment. And number three, you save the lives of girls in Malawi that drop out of school because boys make fun of them because of their period or when they're in their menstrual period. So you can solve three problems at once by giving me $1.3 million.
Oh, my. So that's impressive.
That's what I did. So so you have purpose, then you have a game plan, and then you have a strategy. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
That recycling stuff.
And I just want to point out, you're such a brilliant storyteller. You did the data because people justify on facts, but they buy off of emotion. When you just said that it helps the girls over in Africa, I just like, oh, my gosh. So, of course, I bought in. You know, it's like you're actually helping humans in addition to helping the business grow. So that's brilliant. And what did this experience teach you about innovation and leadership? Because you had an idea, you built the idea, you went and proved it, but then you had to build a business. What did you learn about innovation and leadership?
I learned a lot about my inability to understand how powerful leadership can be and how much you need to spend time learning how to be a leader. I don't care whether you're leading in your house, whether you're leading in your school, at work, leadership has to be learned at some point. It's not something you're born with automatically, as most people think. You can be born as a charismatic person, but that doesn't mean you're a leader. You can be born as a stable person. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily a leader. So you can take charisma, you can take stability, you can take buoyancy, and then make it much more crispier by learning techniques of how to lead people, number one, how to lead yourself, number two, how to actually manage conflict, how to manage the word no, that you have to learn how to manage the word no, how to manage the word yes, you know, because if you're given a yes, you I've seen leaders fail because they got yes every time, and they didn't know how to manage the easiness of yes. How do you manage the hardness of no? How do you manage failure? So I had to spend a lot of time, Mary, learning those terms and how to actually grow into being able to lead my fellow employees, my donors, my board members. So leadership is a structural process, just like everything else.
So
you have to learn different structures and how to lead in different structures. Not every Not every leadership technique is you can use to manage every situation. There's right. no one universal leadership technique that manages every different situation. So being, flexible in your leadership and understanding that you can actually learn a different form of leadership and technique is very, very important in leadership.
And so I know that you also had mentors, because at one point I was one of your mentors in the public speaking mm-hmm. and getting you out there in a bigger way. And so I also want to say great leaders do learn from other people. And we had a wonderful time working together and getting to see you go from you were a college speaker. We brought you to a corporate audience and the mega bucks followed. And so.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying, Mary. If I had never met you, because the technique I was using to get my college speaking engagement was not going to work for corporations. And you told me that in the beginning. You said, Derek, mm-hmm. for corporations, you've got to change this to this new technique.
Yeah.
And when we moved to that new technique, I was doing speaking engagement for corporations because of you. And if you want to learn that technique, you better talk to Mary.
That's right. Oh, it's my passion to help people find their greatest message and find where they fit in the world and find how they can influence people. And it was so clear to you, you had a bigger mission. And so it's so mm-hmm. great that you've been able to go on. Now, I know that you've had so many different jobs over the last several years. We only have a couple of minutes left before the break. But tell me about some mm-hmm. of your work that you did with the Martin Luther King organization and some of the other places and causes that you've had since the Global Soap Project.
Yeah, so most of the people who know me know that I'm I really care about humanity. Mm-hmm. And I was brought in by a mentor of mine, June Lewis, who passed away not too long ago. And I was told about this incredible job to become the CEO of the National Center for Civil and Human Rights based out of Atlanta. Mm. And it was looking at the humanity mm-hmm. of the civil rights movement and how it framed the way the U.S. now functions. Mm-hmm. And I'm African, so I'm not African-American, so I'm African. I didn't know anything about civil rights. Mm-hmm. I was like, what are civil rights? And as I learned a lot about it, I realized that there's no America without civil rights. Mm-hmm. That means that your rights as a human being, the civil rights around them, the way you're treated by other human beings is important. So I took that job on and I learned so much out of it. But now I'm the CEO of the center of the Clean Production Action, which is an organization we can talk about later on, that looks at the issue of chemicalization, especially hazard chemicalization in your food, in your daily life, and how it impacts you as a human being. So I've worked in civil rights movement organizations. Now I'm working for chemistry organizations. I've worked at recycling organizations. So you can tell that I move from one place to another because your brain has so many skills. And you should use all of them if you get an opportunity. So that's what I've done.
I think what you've done is you've brought the innovation, you've brought the leadership, you've brought the passion, you've brought the charisma, and the ability to sell a story from the stage with every single event that you've been able to, or cause or organization that you've come in contact with. And so I think what you are able to do is you are at that inspiring leadership model, and that takes a lot of time, like you were saying, to learn a lot of skill, you know, the storytelling, the helping other people, coach other people. You are a communicator. Mm. And that's what people, as they go into leadership, really need to focus in on is that deep and amazing communication. You are so good at it. We're going to take a quick break. We have been talking to the amazing Derek Kayongo from Uganda, who came here and started the Global Soap Project. He's been involved with several different causes. He is a man of faith. He is a strong, incredible person and a good friend of mine. And we're going to take a break right now. And I hope you'll join us again, because we're going to talk about the organization he's with and saving us from all those chemicals in the food. So be right back and grab your pen. You're going to learn some stuff. We'll see you in a minute.
Your greatest impact is still ahead. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. And we are here talking to Derek Kayongo. who is a fascinating individual who's come to the United States from Africa, and he has changed things. He's let people know that they have a responsibility to look at their life and to recreate your life. If you see a problem, you want to try to solve it. And he's showing us how he did it several different times. And we're talking today about his new job. And Derek, you've been with the Clean Production Action for, I don't know, has it been over a year at this point?
Yes, it's been a year and a half now.
Year and a half, okay. And what you are doing now is you are talking to organizations about the chemicals that they're putting out, all sorts of chemicals. I know that is chemicals that's affecting us in our food. Share with me what the mission of the organization is, and what are you doing to educate people about it?
Yeah, so as I mentioned to you, Mary, the mission of the organization is to really figure out what chemicals in our environment, in our bodies, in our daily consumption are really hazardous and that are creating very big problems like cancer, you know, diabetes, and all the other diseases that we face as human beings. And we're trying to figure out what those chemicals are and then try to figure out how we can actually redesign those chemicals into benign new chemicals so that we can actually plow back some of that hazardous chemical, so that you can actually eat something and feel comfortable that you're going to be alive the next day, to be a little bit sensational. It's, so that's what the organization does.
It's amazing, though, because they have been, you said earlier that the chemical, the periodic table, is so many years old, and we've been working off of a very old model. And do some of the scientists that are putting together food, do they just assume that all these chemicals are good for us? And over time, it compounds in our body, and that's when, I guess, disease can happen. Is that how you see it?
Well, let me tell you a really interesting thought. To become a chemist, you don't have actually to learn toxicology. So you can actually become a chemist and make any kind of chemical you want without understanding its impact on somebody else's health, the toxicology of it all.
Wow.
So you have toxicologists living in a different world and chemists living in a different world. And because of that binary approach to production and manufacturing, we now have all these chemicals in our supply chain that are totally, totally bad for your health. So that is what we are worried about, and that's what we're trying to redo and figure out a way to actually change that around. That's what this is all about.
How do you even do it?
Do you understand what you're doing?
Yeah, that's such a huge mission, because we get used to eating our same old, if you like ice cream or Oreos or whatever, and it usually takes time for people to understand, okay, something is bothering my digestive or my brain or whatever, and then you do the elimination diet, and then you realize, oh my gosh, that stuff is toxic. But is your organization educating people, or are you educating the chemists? Who are you guys actually working towards helping people change?
Well, the most important people that we are really working with are corporations that are putting out products, and without even sometimes them knowing how harmful those products are, because corporations are not in the business of chemistry, they're in the business of making money. But can you imagine, let me tell you a quick example. Let's say it's Valentine's Day, and you're worried, you have your beautiful husband or beautiful boyfriend, and he goes and brings you a beautiful lingerie. It's a bra. And you are so happy. It's this beautiful pink bra. Oh, you're like, oh, my gosh, what a romantic exposure, a gesture. You put that bra on, and as soon as you put on that bra and you start to go through your day and you start to sweat, because of the pores in your breast, the bra has chemicalization in it that leaks into your breast. And your breast recognizes that in those chemicals happens to be a dangerous, hazardous chemical that it cannot handle. And it sends an alarm to the whole body. And it's screaming and says, we have a problem. But because you're going to wash that bra for 1 or 2 or 3 days or 3 months, the chemical starts to die away. So the breast thinks it's winning. But guess what? Next time, Valentine happens, and what happens? He buys you a brand new bra. Same chemical. And this goes on for 20 years.
Oh, man.
What do you think is going to happen to that breast?
Yeah.
Over 20 years of being given hazardous chemicals.
Wow.
It's going to get breast cancer.
Yeah.
Now, is that the only reason why you get breast cancer? No, there are many reasons why you get breast cancer, because there are other chemicals that are also playing a role in it. But I'm just giving you a simple example of how breast cancer is a problem through just one little product.
So
if we were working with a company that makes bras, and we told them, give us your bra, let's do a chemical footprint and figure out what chemicals are in the bra. And if we told the company, these are the two chemicals that are going to give a woman breast cancer, please take them out of the bra. Then we're in business. That's what we do.
This is amazing.
Chemical footprint.
Do you have a website, kind of like how when boyfriends are bad or they cheat on people, they have websites that expose the bad companies? And I've heard that some of the yoga pants that are really popular, I won't mention any names, I don't want to be sued, but that do have bad chemicals in them. And shouldn't there be a tell-all type of place where we expose companies that are not changing and eliminating those powerful toxins?
Well, there are organizations that do that, but ours is different. Ours is really about working with the corporations to help them get off ramp off of that particular problem. So what we do is work with companies to really help us give them their chemical footprint.
Right.
Once we do that chemical footprint map, then we can tell them which chemicals in the supply chain are a problem.
Love that.
And then those companies, we've seen them change, going from grade one, which is the worst, to going to grade 3, 4, because they're pulling some of those chemicals out. So our job is not to expose companies and make them look horrible.
Right.
No, it's to really work with them.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are a corporation, come to us. If you're a corporation, come to us and we'll help you really identify those chemicals, and then you can take them out. Because companies are big at denying things,
That's
what the business we're in. We want you to work with us and we'll help you out.
I think that is brilliant. And the company, again, is Clean Production Action. And so I know that this is probably also impacting people's mental health. I know that food also. And years ago when I brought it to one of the doctors for my son, and I said, my son is allergic to gluten because they've changed the way they make wheat and it's causing him ADD issues. And so he said, well, there's no proof that any food impacts the brain. And I said, well, how come I was able to take his meds from 30 down to 10 in 1 month, milligrams? And so he just wrote it down because they didn't really study it before. And now it does sound like that people are studying. I love it that you guys are working directly with the companies. How have you found the individuals that you're working with, that the companies are they interested? Do they want to help? Do they want to change? What is the temperature of the people that you go to at the companies, the corporations?
Some of them are very, very reactively positive and are doing very, very well. So that's the hope that we have. Some of them, of course, don't want to talk about it because they're making a lot of money. But this is where it goes back to what you and I were talking about, which is purpose, a purpose-driven life. If you're a corporation that has a CEO who doesn't care about the well-being of their customers because they're making a lot of money and they want to buy a new jet and buy a new Bentley at the expense of the people that they're serving, then that's not what purpose-driven life is all about. But if you're a CEO, like we've seen some of the CEOs who really care about changing the chemistry and the supply chain and making their customers healthy, then that kind of CEO is fantastic. And if you can Google that, you will see corporations that have done very, very well in trying to make sure they clean their supply chain and they're giving you a good healthy food and giving you a good healthy pants and giving you a good healthy TV and that kind of thing. So my job as Derek is to bring that sort of morality into purpose. Morality into purpose is very, very important because the rest of us then benefit from that morality within purpose.
Yes.
But purpose-driven life just for the sake of purpose, because you have a purpose. Purpose can be immoral, Mary. Purpose can be very immoral. You can have a purpose that is destroying of other people's lives.
Yes.
That's why I call it moral purpose.
Yes, driven the moral life. Purpose.
That's the difference between the word purpose. Which most people take for granted.
I think that's so powerful. And Derek, for the average listener, and we only have a couple of minutes before the break, but what should people start paying attention to? You're talking about everything, the TVs, the Wi-Fi, the food in the kitchen. What should we start paying attention to when it comes to chemicals and how they're impacting us?
Well, it depends what you're in, but let's go with what they call PFAS. These are plastic kitchenware. Yeah.
Ooh.
So, for example, if you have any black plastic kitchenware, spatulas, you know,
yeah.
spoons, get rid of all of that.
Oh, yeah, I've got one of those.
Use stainless steel.
That's
much better for you.
Oh,
yeah. Stainless steel. That's one good example of how you actually do it. If you're a mother and you have a child who is learning how to crawl, and you have a carpet at your home, and you have people who come and clean your carpet, ask them what chemical are they using to clean that carpet, because that child will be exposed to a hazardous chemical, and you'll have problems down the road.
Mm.
So just really pay attention to what you consume,
mm-hmm.
how you consume it. You know, as somebody said, too much of everything is too bad. You know, so that's what I say. Just look at PFAS, PFAS. These are chemicals that are within your food processes. Look for those.
Okay, yeah.
The BPA, I can guarantee you'll be healthy.
And the BPA-free, I know the Teflon pans, and there are a lot of things you're saying in the kitchen, because we are around them every day. I know microwaves are, that's not chemicals, but I know when things get heat up, especially the plastic, that causes bad to chemicals in the food. So we do just have to get educated about all of our awareness, you know, what you're wearing, what's in your home, the chemicals you're using for pesticides and on your yard and fertilizer and all of that. It's a constant education. We have to be aware. And Derek, you're doing such a great job of keeping those companies, you know, working towards us and for us. So I'm appreciative of that. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Derek Kayongo in a few minutes. He's got some really amazing advice on legacy and how you can create the legacy that you want and the purpose that you need to have in this life. We'll be right back. We'll take a break.
Reach out to Mary Gardner at marygardner.com. Open doors, build a legacy. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. And we are having a fun conversation with one of my favorite speakers, Derek Kayongo. And I don't know if you've listened to me before, but you may know that I'm a former celebrity lecture agent. And I've been a publicist. And now I help people with their influence and with their speaking, and whether they're a company or whether they are doing speeches. And Derek and I worked together years ago. And I want to recommend him so highly as a speaker. Derek can make an audience just get to their feet. He is such a dynamic storyteller, and he creates this environment where people are happy. He incites this innovation and just happiness. He's so dynamic on stage. He dresses impeccably. So if you are interested, I'm telling you, you know, Derek, I just remember the story of how, you know, we got you booked at that event, and you were making $2,500 a speech. That was respectable for a college speaker, but in one presentation you had like 200 people. You booked like 200 speeches in one speech. You had everybody at your vendor booth and everything. So you are one of those speakers that just lights up a room. So I just wanted to say, you guys, if you have a company and you want to have a speaker about leadership or purpose driven work, you contact Derek, because he'll do a great job for you. So Derek, go back to you. I want to talk about reinvention, because you were able to reinvent yourself multiple times. I know you always do it with a smile on your face, but what would you do to somebody who doesn't feel like they're all happy right now and they're feeling stuck, and especially with all the uncertainty in the world? What advice would you give that person who's stuck?
To own it, own that space. When I was talking about being a former refugee, a lot of my friends who are former refugees did not want to be identified as former refugees, because they thought they would put them in a particular bracket where people sort of look down upon them. But I found my voice, and within that voice, I found that a lot of people were going through what I'm going through. So I'm a former refugee that went through this incredible trauma as a child around the firing squad at the age of 10.
Mm.
But you know what? As I expressed my fears and my trepidation, I realized that a lot of human beings go through the same trauma. It was not just a Derek thing. Trauma is not just a Derek thing. A lot of us have trauma. So, but as we go through that trauma, we all have to, we all find different ways to fight back in the trauma. And we need to teach those new ways of fighting back trauma so that others who are going through that same trauma can learn. So rather than hide behind your trauma and say you have nothing to offer because you think trauma is everybody, no, the way you go through it may be the key that opens the door to another human being's way to get out of that trauma. So
I like that.
It's like I say, every song has not been sung in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be a brand new sound, mm-hmm. a brand new word, a brand new song.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, the way we address these questions around purpose, use your key to open the door, and that key you can then give to another person
mm-hmm.
to open several other doors that are being shut.
That's right.
So that's how I look at that particular piece.
That's so great. So if someone were listening right now and they know, Derek, that they're meant for more, but they're afraid to take that leap, what would you say to them?
Be afraid. It's okay. Yeah. It's scary. Mm.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, it can be scary. You're right.
Yeah.
They can fall on their face.
Scary.
But then you get right back up. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that most people are used to people saying, don't be scared. You go and be. Come on. I'm not that kind of speaker. I'm not that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I like to own emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And if the emotion is fear,
mm-hmm.
I own it. But then I sit down with that fear and I say to myself, what am I really scared of?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that I'm scared of me not being confident enough to tell the story?
Yeah.
Am I scared of because I've not articulated the story,
mm-hmm.
which is what you and I, Mary, did? You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to speak to corporations. I was
mm-hmm.
scared of speaking to 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I was just used to speaking to college students because I was comfortable with smaller groups. But you told me one thing. You said, Derek, just go to stage and do your performance as if nobody's watching you. Tell your story as if you're talking to yourself and your mom or something like that. And that's what I did. And when I found the audience in my mom and my dad, then all of a sudden I was finding audience in for corporation and everybody. So own the fear,
mm-hmm.
whatever is scary, but then start to work yourself out of it by asking yourself, what are you really scared of?
Mm-hmm.
And that will tell you exactly how to fight out of it and get to the other end. So don't get locked in the fear itself. Just investigate and figure out how to come out of it.
Oh, that's so true. It's so true. And it can be really scary and intimidating. And also mm-hmm. be able to find mentors and coaches that can help you through. Start reading about mm-hmm. what it is you want to do so you get familiar with the terms. And if you're looking mm-hmm. for a new job in a new industry, become familiar. Sound like a savvy person. After a couple hours of reading even and educating yourself, you can sound like mm-hmm. an expert. And so there are so many tools that are available in today's world with the internet and at the library even. And so Derek is talking so sincerely about how to and why you should pursue most passionately your purpose in life, because life is short. Mm-hmm. We both know it. Derek, what problem are you most passionate about solving next? Do you see yourself in this chemical arena for a long time? Is there something else calling your name? Tell us, what are those problems that you're wanting to solve still?
Yeah, I think right now it's really this idea of human consumption mm-hmm. and how much we consume on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
which is equal to how much we waste on a daily basis.
Oh.
And I became a minimalist about 5 years ago. I had 3 cars. I had a wardrobe from here to Zimbabwe. I had more shoes than my wife.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it.
And I had so much stuff. And I realized that that stuff was not allowing me to go and find who I am
mm.
and live in other countries and live in other cultures. And so what I did is I got rid of all of that.
Wow.
And I told my wife, I said, what do you want to do? She said, I want to go live in Malawi and become the CEO of a company in Malawi. And I said to my son, where do you want to go? He said, I want to go live in Spain and play basketball. And I asked my daughter, what do you want to do? She said, I want to go with mommy and live in my house. And I want to live in Japan and Australia.
God. Wow.
Because we didn't have things tying us down.
Oh, that's brilliant.
If you have something tying you down,
that
means you're not experiencing your daily life in full measure, because you have to go and approach it. If it's a house, which I love houses, everybody should have a house. But at a certain age, I'm 56 years old right now, Mary.
Yeah.
And I want to see God's work, which
Amen.
Is beauty Amen. In New Zealand, in England. I want to go to Japan. I want to go to Portugal. Come on.
I love that. So I love that.
That is that's what happens to me when I come back from all those experiences. Yeah. This is what I come back with.
Okay.
Beautiful,
I think that's
new story.
So, yeah, and
beautiful
the human consumption is such an important topic for all of us. Yes, as Americans, we consume way too much. We're going to switch gears right now, Derek, because I have this amazing segment called You Rock.
You Rock, You Rock,
yes.
You Rock, You Rock.
And the You Rock section, Derek, was because my brother who passed about 8 years ago, Terry, used to tell me, Mary, you rock. You can do anything. And he was my biggest encourager. And meanwhile, he had pain in his body. He had terrible scoliosis. And his only thing left at the end of his life really was encouraging others. And I always remember that. And so I always want to be able to encourage other people. And that's what my hope is and my drive and my desire and my purpose is to encourage people to keep going on this crazy, you know, life journey. And I always take out one person that I really love and admire. And today I want to acknowledge my mom, who is turning 95 this week. And my mom has been a pillar of strength for our entire family. And she's a godly woman. She's a wise woman, a prayer warrior. And so many people have been showing up and just telling how much they love her. And I have recognized her before in the You Rock section, but this was big. Mom, you rock. I love you. You are the best. Okay, Derek, who rocks in your world?
You know, I'm going to go with mom and dad as well. Without my mother, I would have never really understood life as it is. And without my father, who fought in the war, my country would have never been free. Mm. And I would have never understood business. So I am with you, Mary. Parents are so important. If you're a parent out there, please take ownership of it and let us have you grow a wonderful child, a wonderful family, because you are the number one important, most important thing in all of our lives.
Amen.
Parents rock.
Parents rock. All right. Well, today, what a powerful conversation with Derek Kayongo. And here's what I want to leave you guys with today is that every single one of us is surrounded by problems in our homes, our communities, our industries, and most people are going to walk by them. But the people who change their lives and change the world are the one that stop and say, maybe I'm supposed to be the one to do something about this. Theirs are purposeful lives, and that is where opportunity lives. And if there's one meaning is found, I want to challenge you today is to look around your world. What is broken? What is missing? What needs attention? And instead of waiting for someone else, ask yourself, what can I do? Because you may not be looking at a problem. You may be looking at your calling. And Derek, what is the last word you want to leave with our audience today?
You need to figure out a way to harness your power to create change. Harness your power to create change.
Mm.
You are all powerful. Never underestimate how brilliant God made you and what talent and skills He gave you. So harness that and create change wherever you are.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you all for being with us today. We just really sincerely appreciate your support. And if you have a great story, please let us know. We'd love to talk to you. Visit my website, marygardner.com. Shoot me an email at mary@marygardner.com. And you can find Derek at derekkayongo.com. He's also registered with Kepler Speakers if you want to book him as a speaker. And we look forward to seeing you in our next segment. And until then, please stay inspired and keep on your purpose because you were created for a reason. Thank you so much for listening today, and God bless you.